Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. When we go to the movies, you go to see the actors, the action, and sometimes the clothes. The wardrobe that we see on the screen can be a star unto themselves, especially in some of those great period films like those Merchant Ivory productions. Ginny Bevan is an Academy Award-winning costume designer. She won for A Room with a View. She's also been nominated for 8 more times for the Oscar, most recently for The King's Speech. Ginny will be speaking tonight at the McNay as part of their exhibit Cut, Costume, and the Cinema, showcasing more than 40 elaborate and breathtaking costumes worn by some of Hollywood's great biggest stars. Ginny, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
And also, we've got Jody Blake here joining us. She's the McNay Art Museum curator. Ginny, Jody, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, so I'm excited because, Ginny, when I'm reading the list of films that you have participated in, been to costumes, some of my most favorite films are all right there. Gorgeous, gorgeous films. So how do you get started? How did you become like the go-to person for when Merchant Ivory said, we're going to do another costume piece, and then they go, let's get Ginny on the phone?
Well, I knew them from a very long time ago. I had an extraordinary beginning with them. My mother sent me to a dance class when I was 3, where I met a boy called Nick Young. And to cut a long story short, Nick got to know Jim and Ismail from a friend he met at school by chance. And so he'd got me involved with them from quite an early stage, and I proved myself quite useful. I went out to India as a companion to Dame Peggy Ashcroft, who I'd done some costumes for, and got drawn into the whole film. And then just became part of the Merchant Ivory family.
Yeah, but you've also studied. You had a degree in...
Curiously, I don't actually have a degree. Okay. Even though I did study. I was too busy making clothes.
So you're already going.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
All right. So let's talk about, like Room with a View.
Yeah.
Starts at very small budget.
Yeah, always.
And they say, okay, and you're working on it. And I understand that some of the clothes you just had to just gather from... Where you could.
Well, no, I was very lucky. By that time, I met John Bright. And in fact, we'd started to work together. We were co-credited. And John owns the best costume house in the world, Cosprop.
Right.
So, of course, John was going to give an awful lot more than, he should have, really, to the project. And I'm sure it's why it does look very good, because we just had Cosprop at our disposal.
Right. So Cosprop is, it looks like a huge warehouse, just
it
full
is.
Of racks and racks of these costumes and
yes.
uniforms. And is it also stuff from the period stuff, or is it everything in the world?
No, it's not everything. It's smaller than some of the ones like Western Costume here or Angels in London. It's more probably from about 1740 to 1940. It's more contained, although it spills off a little bit on the edges and doesn't really do uniform. But what it has got is the most fantastic 19th century collection, all built up by John very slowly over the last 50 years, piece by piece, show by show, adding. He buys stuff, he makes stuff, and it's now just an amazing source for period clothing and something you'll see in almost every period film, because American designers come to London to use it, and Russian designers and Australians.
So Jody Blake at the McNay, you'll have this exhibit Cut, but the McNay has this, your own collection and your own, you always have exhibits on these types of things. Talk about the McNay and your legacy and relationship with showing costumes and theater items.
When we had the opportunity to present Cut to San Antonio, we really jumped at the chance because we thought it would be a wonderful way to really have a season museum-wide focus on costume and to connect our really internationally known collection of theater arts with the wonderful film costumes from Cosprop. And so we have this sort of these symphonic exhibitions that really play off one another very beautifully. Some of Jenny's costumes, for example, in some ways are dead ringers for ones in the theater costume costume exhibition, but you can see the subtle differences that might occur because of the designers and, say, differences of designing for the close-up of the camera lens as opposed to, you know, the upper balcony in a Broadway show. So it's just a rich opportunity for us to sort of have two perspectives on costume.
At the exhibit cut, you have well-known costumes like Johnny Depp's the Pirates Captain Sparrow costume. And people, would love to just get close up and just look at every stitch of fabric on there.
No, absolutely. And, of course, are just amazed at the physicality of it and looking at the details and the way it's been worn and the sort of the sense of being worn and the swashbuckling. No, it's very fascinating for that to people to see the actual garments that they know from the film.
So, Jenny, let me ask you about informing the character. Now, I know that you have the process that you're one of the first people who gets involved when the film gets going, right? They got this script, the director, everything's moving forward. Now we need to start thinking about costumes because no one has shot a single frame yet.
Oh, yeah, no.
Early in pre-production.
Well, as early as possible. Sometimes it's a little frightening how little time you get. But, yes, you are brought on after normally the production designer, you are brought on quite early to start prepping and thinking about it and getting everything together.
And so is that when you start, you read the script,
yep.
You get an idea, you consult with the director to see what his vision is like.
Yes, absolutely. But the script is your sort of basis of everything and the director's vision, if he has one. Obviously, some directors really want to just leave it to you. They're only interested in the actors. Some really don't know quite where they're going and love to, but most have a clear, vision of what they want to see. And that's what informs my then thinking about how I'm going to work on it.
Well, I've heard that being a director is about making decisions. And so, yes, that, no, that, yes, well,
that's in an ideal world, yes.
Okay, so, but then you got to figure out what you can work with.
You're balancing all the time. Obviously, you're balancing a budget because you have to be practical, especially these days. You're balancing actors' personalities, everybody's personalities, the physicality of where you are, the locations. Are you in the African desert or are you in the studio in London? But really, the main thing is the storytelling and the supporting of the actor with the clothes. That's what I do.
So how much information is in that first script? Is there anything in there about while he's wearing something?
There can be. I mean, some people write with full descriptions, and some people, it's completely sparse. But I read it, and I do a basic breakdown, and I always do it in a pencil on a piece of A3 paper, where you're pulling lists of each character and what they need. And as you go through the script, you'll do this 3 or 4 times. You just get to know it, and it seeps into your soul, really, and that's the start of it all.
Okay, and when will the actors get involved?
A little bit later on, and sometimes horribly late. So I will have done my prep, I will have done my lists, I will have sourced either real costumes, started to make prototypes. If, like Anna and the King or Alexander, you can't go to a costume house and find it. You're going to make every stitch. So you're beginning to get people together to make the prototype shapes. You're looking for fabrics. You're researching. You're doing sort of everything together.
Yeah, we've got to talk about the researching because we want to know, are you more concerned about being historically accurate or turning audiences' heads? All these types of, and how do actors, how do they want to put their stamp on things? And they certainly want to look cool. So there's a lot of forces tugging back and forth as you go forward on this.
Absolutely. And
we're going to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
Also, I got to open up the phone lines so that people want to call in and ask you some questions. Do that. The number is 614-8980. If you want to talk to Jimmy Bevan, she's an Academy Award-winning costume designer here in San Antonio for a special presentation tonight at the McNay Art Museum. Again, that number is 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. In the studio, Jenny Bevan, Academy Award-winning costume designer, won for Room with a View. She's been nominated 8 times, most recently for The King's Speech. Also, Jody Blake, the McNay Art Museum curator, here talking tonight. Well, tell me about the excitement tonight that y'all are having at McNay. This is pretty cool.
Oh, it is. And in fact, right now, if any listeners are still wanting to attend, we're in overflow seating. So we were just delighted at the response to Jenny's lecture.
And this is all part of CUT, their exhibit, traveling exhibit. How long does that exhibit stay at the McNay?
Through January 19th.
And there's like an app where you can actually sort of cyberly wear some of these awesome costumes, see how you would look sporting the Johnny Depp pirate costume.
Absolutely. It's a lot of fun.
So, Jenny, you were talking about the actors and how they get involved in the process. And our phone lines are open, so callers, jump in here, 614-8980. Let's talk about Robert Downey Jr. and how you worked with him on Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, that was my first.
And those two films with him.
Two films with Robert. And that was completely extraordinary. I had this bizarre phone call with him about 2 weeks before he actually came to England. And I don't know really what on earth we talked about. But I said to him, I'd done some thinking about it. And my brief was absolutely not to do the look of the...
of the Basil Rathbone.
Exactly. And in fact, that, interestingly, was just an illustration by Sidney Paget in the London Evening News. It was never written by Conan Doyle. So anyway, the brief was not to do that, to reinvent it. And so I thought about this character, Sherlock. And I mean, I knew that Robert was quite a lot sort of off-the-wall actor and very interesting. So I thought, sort of, where would this character get his clothes and how would he wear them? And I imagine that if he had any interest in them at all, he would probably have got something from vintage or nicked it off one of his friends, which we actually shared in the first film. But also, he probably didn't bother to take them off at night. And if he did, they'd be just in a heap on the floor and randomly put on. And so that's what I sort of had when Robert came to the fitting. I had this sort of random group of clothes. And he really took to it. The fitting can be the most exciting time. These actors come in and they start to hatch the character, as we sometimes call it.
Sometimes you got to walk like the character and
Absolutely.
Feel with it, get in their skin and wear their clothes to sort of conjure up who this person is.
Yeah.
Now, there's a part in the first Sherlock film where he dons the trappings of a tramp.
Yes.
And that was improvised?
It was completely improvised. Those boys, Guy Ritchie, Jude Law and Robert Downey Jr., would come to work in the morning. They would immediately disappear into normally Robert's caravan and discuss the day's scenes, which they would then proceed to rewrite. One or all of them would then come over to the costume trailer and would say, Jenny, we just had an idea. Have you got? At which my heart would either sink because I hadn't or would be great because I had, you know, somehow I'd second guess them. And then somehow we'd sort of concoct it. And that was just a completely out of the blue.
So I was wondering when I saw that, was Robert Downey, was he doing an allusion to Charlie Chaplin, the tramp, which he had portrayed?
Not that he told me, but he could have. I mean, it was just he grabbed a coat and he grabbed a scarf off an extra. And I think he took the hat off someone and just sort of created this thing out of, you know, and then he wanted an eye patch, so we made him an eye patch, and it was just, and of course he sort of gets it having escaped out the back, so it was all terribly real.
And in the second Sherlock film, he actually wears a dress, he runs out the house, and he has to actually put on Jude Law's costume. Is that actually his Jude Law's actually fitted costume?
Actually his fitted costume from the first Sherlock.
And you can see how differently he wears it to show how the character makes the clothing come alive.
Yes, because Robert, everything in those films was accurate 19th century. I mean, you know, some of it was a bit old-fashioned, but it was kind of accurate. It was the way they wore it. Jude wore his very correctly, and you could put him into any film dressed like that. But Robert used to wear it sort of back to front, upside down, open-necked, you know. But the clothing itself was actually pretty straight.
But the people are more interested in the ladies' costumes,
oh,
you know, and how wonderful they are. Now, are you, like, locked into the colors of the period, in the dyes that were available at that time? Somebody, they want to be bright and cheery, and maybe that color wasn't available or too expensive, out of reach for that character?
Not at this kind of period. I mean, dyes were pretty sophisticated. If you look at paintings of Ingres and people like that, those fantastically bright colors were around. And silks were coming in from India from early in the 18th century. So I'm not normally locked by that sort of restriction. It's more to do with telling the story of the character as to whether they should or shouldn't. or and not actually overbearing on the character, so that you do look at the face. And you're
now, like, are you trying to really excite the eye of the viewer? They know they're coming to see costume drama, and you're going to give them a show. Or are you really trying to portray the era that historically?
Not the first. I absolutely not. I'm completely trying to do what is right for the film and supporting that particular character. And most of what I do is pretty straightforward period storytelling. However, and I don't really want people to notice the clothes particularly. I just want it to be right within the whole context.
Let's get a caller on the air. Our lines, if you want to join on this, is 614-8980, 614-8980. Joshua, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, Joshua. Joshua, you there?
Yes.
Go ahead. You're on the air.
I was wondering if you ever get a little bit disappointed when one of your favorite pieces make it really big in the movies, because then I would think you wouldn't really be able to use it again. For instance, like the Johnny Depp costume, that would be most likely immediately recognized, and I'll take the answer off the air.
All right, Joshua, thanks for your call. Appreciate that. Now, you didn't do the Johnny Depp costume.
I didn't. No, Penny Rose did the Johnny Depp costume. But I think when you do something like that, or even the Robert Downey Jr., Sherlock Holmes, you wouldn't use it again anyhow. You that sort of done it stuff, and that shouldn't be reused. But when you're using Cosprop's basic stock, I mean, I've seen the same blouse that we used in Room with a View reappear in various other, you know, Edwardian pieces. But because the actress wearing it will have such a different character, you won't really notice it. And anyway, today we can all buy something from H&M, but we'll all make it look different.
Now, you've worked a lot with Helena Bonham Carter. Could I say that she's one of, like, your actresses that you've dressed her many times?
Funny enough, I haven't dressed her that often. I did the beginning of her career. Well, not completely the beginning,
and
but
in
Room
King's
with
Speech.
A View and The King's Speech. But in the middle, there wasn't. I mean, there was Howard's End. But actually, then there was a big gap. But it was just wonderful seeing her again.
So in The King's Speech, she plays the Queen Mother, and
she
so
does.
People know her, and they know how she dressed, and so do you just follow that template?
Yes, to some extent, absolutely. I did, you know, the obvious research. There's a lot of photographic evidence of that period and of her, but the thing the real Queen Mother did was wear much clearer, brighter colours. But on Helena, they looked just like costumes. They didn't look real, so we took all the colours down. And somehow then the Queen Mother's spirit came out of that. So it was an adaptation.
So right now the film that's in post-production that you're working on is completely different than any film that you've worked in the past. Tell me about this new Mad Max film. What can you tell me?
Well, I mean, it's obviously the fourth in a Mad Max series.
But they're rebooting the series, right?
I guess they'd like to. I think if it works, George Miller does have two other films up his sleeve. And I got involved in this one because Norman Morrissey, who was his costume designer, decided she really did want to retire. I mean, she's now got another life. And so I was incredibly lucky to be asked to do it because it is, as you so rightly say, very different. And I felt very privileged that, you know, I was asked to do this. And we shot it in Namibia. It's a post-apocalyptic world. George has rules, you know, if anything you're using as costume could have a more useful life, then you can't use it. So we were trying to make them wear things that, you know, you couldn't really. I mean, it wasn't just decoration, is what I'm trying to say.
So Tom Hardy is the lead character.
Tom Hardy,
he plays the
now,
Mel Gibson character.
Absolutely. He is Max.
And you worked with him in another film recently.
I did Child 44 with Tom just now in Prague. Completely different Soviet era, grim tale.
And so what's it like working with Tom Hardy?
Well, I just love Tom Hardy. I think he is truly one of the most extraordinary actors we have in England, well, in the world. I mean, he's just inhabits roles. He's got variety. He's phenomenally committed to the role and a hugely nice person.
All right, let's get another caller on the air. Alice joins us. Alice, welcome to The Source.
Hello.
Hello, Alice, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I was just wondering, do you have a specific crew that pretty much stays with you, of sewers and assistant designers and what have you? It change a lot from movie to movie.
Thanks for that call, Alice. Appreciate that.
Yes, I mean, I do have a crew I absolutely love to use. And the only problem is that sometimes we get out of sync with each other because I need to take a break or I get offered a little theatre piece that I want to do. And then, you know, my crew goes off with another designer. And then again, according to where in the world we are, we will use sewing teams like I had in Prague, a local team, and in Namibia. So I can't always take my whole crew with me everywhere. But there are certainly people I like, I trust, and I need as that backup, because obviously on huge films, I can't possibly design every costume. I try and give a very good...
So how much stitching and cutting do you do?
Me?
Yeah.
Not a great deal, although I have occasionally done a bodged alteration when needs must.
Oh, yeah, quickly, sew this up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yes. Or when there's absolutely nobody else free. I have... I can put a back in a waistcoat, but, you know, really, there are a lot of people who are a great deal better than
me. All right, well, thank you so much for coming and telling, sharing the secrets of these great films. Jenny Bevan, she's an Academy Award-winning costume designer, and she's appearing tonight at the McNay Art Museum. Also with me in the studio, Jody Blake, McNay Art Museum curator, and the exhibit runs till about mid-January. And tonight you're going to be speaking about your experiences in the movies and making these beautiful, amazing costumes. Thanks for coming up. Tell us all about it.
Been a great pleasure.
This is The Source on KSTX and David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.